Thank you for the introduction. Thank you for having me. And thank you for Simo to kind of giving all the introduction to the talk. So I don't have to explain that much about SSD, but I will repeat some of the stuff. Since this is a summer conference, I certainly don't have to tell you anything about WinBind. But as Simo already mentioned, there was some controversy during the last years, what would be the better. So it was a kind of tiny WinBind VI versus Emacs discussion around this. But I think most of it happened on a kind of user level and not so much on the technical level. And so I am also working in the identity management team at Red Hat together with Simo as a software engineer. So Simo is the architect. And if you don't have time to code all his nice and brilliant ideas, I and some of the colleagues are happy to work on them. And from my point of view, as Simo also showed, and I will show in a similar graph, okay, there are some overlaps between WinBind and SSD. So they read data from SSD, they read data from Active Directory and present it to typical interfaces like PUM and NSS to the client operating system. But there are many, many differences. As Simo already pointed out, all the secure channel NTLM stuff, which is only available with WinBind. Then there is the integration to CTDB and managing the trust for the Samba server. On the other hand, as Simo also mentioned, SSD is more focusing on all the different other aspects on the clients, what application we have. We have AutoFS, we have SUDO, we have access controls, we have all kinds of applications running on the clients wanting some data from Active Directory. So Active Directory is a general store for user information. So you not only have the username and the password, so you have all this kind of attributes. You have the telephone number, you have the room number. You can add application-specific attributes to Active Directory, and some application want to access them, and how to make this available in kind of generic way. So my idea or my point of view is, okay, we have two tools that have some similarities, but also some things which are unique to each of them. So why not combine them to get the most out of it? With respect to usability, from the user point of view, from making administration easy from the administrator's point of view, and also maybe a bit from the security aspect to avoid copying lots of data and lots of configuration around, giving a chance that some of them get borked or put into places where they don't have to be. As you see on the graph, the top three lines are things both have in common. So they get the user and group data and other data as well from Active Directory. And this, I think, will stay because we have different needs on the WinBind and on the SSD side. It would be nice to have a kind of common interface or some common storage where both WinBind and SSD can put the data, but that is future, as Simo pointed out. On the other hand, we have PUM and the NSS interface, which provides data to the operating system. And as long as both WinBind and SSD sees the same data, we can kind of choose either of them. And so here I'm coming to my first point, which is ID mapping. This is important to be consistent on the WinBind and SSD side. Why is it important? Because both the Unix world or the Linux world and the Windows world use some different kind of identifiers to identify their objects, so basically the users and the groups. On Windows, we have the so-called security identifier, or SIDs, and on Unix and Linux, we have the POSIX IDs. And there are some, typical, the POSIX ID is just a number, and the secure identifier basically is also just a number from the computer point of view, but it's represented in this notification with S-1, and so on. One tiny difference, which is not that important but has to be kept in mind, is that the SID is kind of a unique namespace for all objects in Active Directory. So the SID will be used for users and groups and so on, and there will be no two SIDs for different kind of objects being the same. on the Linux and Unix side, you have the same namespace, meaning the same numbers for can have the same number for a group and for a user, and they are not related. So you can have a user with the UID 1000, and you have a group with the group ID 1000, and they might not be related. Some distributions have this concept of private user groups where they on purpose assign the same group ID to the primary group of the user to avoid conflicts here and to make sure the user has a private group. But the main difference I want to point out is that the number or the ID used on Windows is more or less 128 bits long, while on the Linux side we have only 32 bits. And yeah, I guess if not Leonard Petering has some great idea, this will not change anytime soon. So we have to kind of find the gap, which is 10 to the order of 28, to fit all this huge number of IDs from the Windows side onto the Unix side. And we don't have any idea what will be the ID on the Unix side, so we have to kind of find some way to map this. And yeah, of course, since everybody's doing this in the previous talks as well, just ask questions.
Okay, thank you. So before diving much deeper into ID mapping, could I ask you to go back to the previous slide, which was very interesting, and an excellent display of what the responsibilities are. So the interesting three are, of course, the first three above at the top. And so the first point is, for me, actually the most interesting, and I would like to have ask a question about that.
Yeah.
So the PAM and NSS I see as follows. Well, WinBot has to do it on systems that use this. If SSSD is there, WinBot should be happy to hand this over. So that's not an issue from the Samba perspective. ID mapping, you will talk about, and I think it could be provided by each because it's a very isolated interface. And the user and group data. So my point is, actually, this should be WinBind's responsibility, and I could imagine SSSD just handing over. And I'm interested because you said SSSD has different needs for this. Mm-hmm. So why can't it just delegate to? What are the different needs? That's the
I will show examples
point.
Later.
Okay.
What kind of data we read additionally from Active Directory, which is typically not read by WinBind. Of course, you can extend WinBind to do it as well. But since from the Samba perspective, you don't have the original use for those attributes, maybe, it might not. Yeah, but I will show some later. So this is when we are coming to smart card authentication, DBus interface, and so on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, so the kind of most simplest way to map the ideas or IDs or to get some common knowledge about the ideas is just to store it in Active Directory. So since Active Directory supports the LDAP schema defined in the RFC 2307 or 2307bs, we can store POSIX IDs in Active Directory. And so far, there were also some tooling from the Microsoft side to add those and to make adding user and group IDs also quite easy. But this will be removed, if I understand it. The schema will stay, but it might be in future harder to get them in. And also, it's kind of an additional load on the Windows administrators. And then there are some additional sources, which are coming from the kind of IPI client origin of SSSD, because in IPI, we allow to override the IDs we either generate or get from Active Directory to meet some kind of needs of legacy systems. So if you have a great environment with lots of older Unix hosts and so on, maybe there are some users who are migrated into Active Directory but should keep their old Unix ID on some of the legacy systems. For this, we implemented those overrides in IPA, and this is also available in plain SSSD, so that for certain needs and for certain use cases, you can just specify explicitly POSIX IDs for users and groups. This is also some of the Samba ID mapping modules do. I just call it first come, first serve. These are the group of these TDB-based ID mapping modules where ever when a new SID is seen, a new ID is assigned. And then for the next SID, next ID is assigned and so on. This is typical valid and can be used for file servers and so on where you don't log in. The drawbacks is when this mapping is got lost and you get a new sequence of SIDs coming to the host, you get new IDs. So this means the ID mapping is part of the configuration, which has to be saved and backup and kept. And if you, for example, set up some new file server, you either have to live with the fact that you are getting new IDs on the file server, yeah, or you have to copy your mapping from one server to another. So in my opinion, there are use cases where it's okay, but it might not scale in every use cases. And then we have another class of ID mappings, which I called algorithmic mappings, where you take the SID and do some kind of mathematical operations on it, or and generate some POSIX ID out of it. Typically, you're splitting the SID in a domain part, which is unique for all objects in the domain, and something which is called RID, or relative identifier, which is just the last number of the string representation of the SID. And now you can take the domain part to select a range of IDs. This can be by a configuration file, or as I will show you, by SSD algorithmically. And in this range, you use the RID as an offset. So for example, if your range starts with 200,000 and you have the SID, the RID 1234, the resulting POSIX ID will be 200,000 1234. SSD is doing it in the same similar way. It takes the domain part of the SID, calculates a murmur hash, so-called murmur hash. We took this because the results are already quite small. Do a modulo division of the number of ranges you have. And this gives you an index which range to select. So you can think we have a range between 1 and about 2 billions available with our 32 bits. And then you split this area into a certain amount of ranges, capital N. And with this algorithm, you just get which slot or which range you take. And then you take the RID and use it as an index part here. The nice thing about this is you kind of don't need any configuration. You just have to define the size of the range or the number of the ranges you want to use. And everything else will be done automatically. And if you're in a Active Directory environment in a forest, they have multiple domains. For each of the domains, you will get a new SID. And yes?
So, how do you handle collisions?
Collisions. collisions are, yeah. The collisions might happen and they have to be handled manually. There is no magic. But so, we're using this algorithm in SSD for, I'm not sure, about for 4 or 5 years. And so I just recently checked with our support, we don't have any customer reporting collisions. So, yes, they would notice. So there will be error messages and you won't see users from the domain which caused the collision and so on. And so, yeah, technically it is possible and it's also always our main concern. What will we do with collisions? What happens? And yeah, how can we help customers? But so far, there were no reports. So it might not happen that often. Maybe this will change a bit, because recently we added something. As you can imagine, the range has a fixed size. Our default size is 200,000. So when there is an Active Directory environment with more than 200,000 objects, which is not that rare, you have to tune the parameters to get larger ranges so that everything will fit in. What we are now doing is we just pick a new range. We just do not take the domain SID as input for the murmur hash, but the domain SID with the first writ of the new domain. So the first writ we cannot match with the old will be added to the SID for the calculating of the memory hash. So for example, here it will then be -333 dash and then 200,000, which is the first writ for the new range. This is will be our new index, and then we get a new range for the next 200,000 objects, and again and again and again. And if you have gaps, so say we have a million, a gap of a million, we don't fill up the missing writs, but we only use what we see. So this is one thing I mentioned earlier. We want to try to avoid massive configuration. It might be necessary in the case of collision, and also might be necessary in the case of working together with Samba to get the same idea of the mapping. But in general, we try to avoid putting this kind of need on the administrator so that he don't have to think about it. So coming back to the original question, how can SSD and Samba, Samba's WinBind run together? My suggestion, it might be depending on the use case. So I will show you some use cases where I think my suggestion makes sense. So let's handle PAM and NSS by SSD, as Michael said. From the Samba side, you might be happy to do so. There are also some points where it technically makes sense. For example, I will show you an example that the PAM interface of SSS supports more than just password authentication. And also on the NSS side, we support kind of a wider range of name types for looking up the user. I will show you also a bit later what I mean with different types of names. So use ID mapping from SSD because you don't have to configure it. It's kind of automatic. And you can use this override feature I mentioned. In theory, this is already possible. Samba already has an ID mapping module for this use case. It's called ID map SSS, NSSS, which just means call the system to get a name for UID or group ID, and then call WinBind to translate the name to a SID, or the other way around. Call WinBind to translate the name to UID, or, and then call the system call to get back the idea. This has the drawback that the name is in between, and names are hard to handle. For example, again, the example with the forest case, you have to use kind of fully qualified names in the forest so that to make sure that the administrator of domain one is not the same as administrator of domain B. So you have to kind of have an indicator for the domain and the name. And so typically you have the NT style, DOM1/administrator and DOM2/administrator. But you also have other kind of the more modern style, also in Active Directory, you use the add and the fully qualified DNS domain name. So there are different types of names, and also many of the customers like to have short names for the domain they join to. There are names where you don't have to use the fully qualified name, and other areas where you have to. And so there's a chance of breakage when you use the domain name in between. And so my suggestion would be to have an ID mapping module specific for the case. And I already sent one to the SSD developer list for review because the Samba interface for ID mapping is really quite simple. It's mainly shown here. There's some call to initialize the ID mapping, and then you have basically two calls, the POSIX ID to SID and the SID to POSIX ID back. That's all we need. And it's easy to implement from the SSD side because we already have a similar module for the SIFS kernel client to do the mapping with SSD.
I want allocate ID. For Samba, it's important.
Well, not all of the Samba providers implement it, so,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is this last method, allocate ID, which is for Samba really important because for historical reasons, Samba code currently needs the ID mapping subsystem to provide a a provider of new Unix IDs, which are not tied to a mapping. And so in Sambo, we have the distinction between the default IDMap config, which catches everything that is not otherwise explicitly configured, and the ability to explicitly configure single domains. And as Sumit said, we not every ID mapping module in Samba provides this this allocate ID method, but this is the distinction whether it's suitable for using it in a default.
Yeah. So situation. It depends a bit. So the typical case is when Samba will see a new SID and wants to have an ID. And so you send the SID to SSD, and SSD has to figure out what is the ID. And as long as it is a normal user or group SID of one of the active domains you're joined in or from the forest, SSD should be able to resolve this. So otherwise, SSD has some other problems. So for those, I see no problem that we have to allocate some. What might be the case are these range of well-known bits, so all users, authenticated users, and so on. When you want to have
built-in stuff like
or
that.
Or built-in, exactly. For those, currently we don't support them in SSD because we have no feeling how to map them to matching POSIX identities. And so we currently don't have them, and as long as you need it in Samba, you should have a block for the built-ins to generate them either via some TDB or other interface. Or I think there also was some discussion on Samba Technical to kind of make a predefined setting for those. So this...
I think it kind of exceeds the scope of the talk. We should get together and discuss the details. Mm-hmm. So it's not how it currently works. Mm-hmm. Of course, Samba can be changed, and I would like to see it go away from the ID mapping module. Mm-hmm. And there are approaches, but as long as we have historic installations, it will be difficult to track this way. But it's an important detail to keep in mind.
So currently, I don't implement the allocate ID, but in theory, it would be possible. SSD will get a SID, it identifies it as built-in or whatever, and then generates an ID from its own pool. So in theory, it would be possible. So if we can sit down and figure out the use case and some sensible answers to those requests, we can integrate it, of course. But currently, it's just for the ordinary users and groups. So my idea is that you just say that the backend is SSS and give it all. If you typically SSD starts giving away IDs from starting 200,000, so you have 1 to 100,999 for usage for other stuff as well. So you can also define a other mapping module for built-in IDs, for example, and do not collide with the IDs assigned by SSD. Besides the advantage that it's not breaking with the names, Volker? It's just a step faster. So in memory, it means you have you're loading the ID mapping module into, for example, the Samba binary. And the ID mapping module will map a memory map file into memory. And so the lookup will not leave the SMBD process when you're doing the lookups in this in-memory cache. So you don't have to go through the socket, and SSD typically takes care that the cache is updated, the in-memory cache is updated as soon as also the on-disk cache is updated.
But it means at least double caching, because we have GenCache, where we also cache that stuff for SMBD consumption. And this sounds like you anticipate changing ID mappings. And that's, for us, it's a complete, utter no-go. I mean, that's a very deep assumption.
Can you repeat?
Okay, from what you said is, SSSD makes sure that the cache is being updated when something happens. And this rang a bell for me that says, well, do you expect changed ID mappings? So user
yes,
administrator
the
was...
the user gets deleted.
Do you recycle the UID?
No.
Okay.
ID mappings should be independent of
independent of existence of objects.
Exactly.
Give it a sync return an ID, period.
Okay.
No checks in the
directory. Yeah. So in this sense, it will not be be updated because there will be no change. New objects will be written to the cache, so maybe you don't have to look them up via the socket interface. But okay, yeah, the mapping will not change. So if the user is removed, sooner or later the mapping will be removed from the cache as well, because when we will then look up again in Active Directory if there is maybe a new object created with the same set. I guess it's not that easy to do this in Active Directory, but so the ID mapping will not change. For any given SID, we always get the same UID back. Okay. So this was the glue between the WinBind and SSD to have some consistent view of the data we get from Active Directory and how to map it to what we need on a POSIX system. So now the question is, yeah, why do we want this at all? So many people will say, okay, I'm fine with when it does everything I want. And in the following, I want to show a couple of examples what SSD, running SSD together with WinBind can offer you on a client system or also on a server system. My first example, Simo mentioned it shortly, is the access control. So in IPA, we have a complex scheme which we call host-based access control, where you can set which user can access which host on which services and so on. On the Active Directory side, you have the group policy objects, and you have also group policy, which, for example, is called allow logon locally and deny logon locally. So why not use this to make access control on an Active Directory client as well? Our idea is to use this kind of group policy objects, where you can define add sits of users and groups who are allowed and denied to log on locally, and map this to PAM services. So, for example, the login, which is the console login, or the graphical login via XDM, KDM, GDM, or whatever graphical login manager you have. Also, some of the console services, like the SU command, which also makes sense to control if some of the users are even allowed to call SU. There are other policy objects I've just shown with the figure, the logon locally. We have also the remote desktop policy, where we say, okay, what is remote? We take SSD and a tool called Cockpit, which will be available in Fedora and also upcoming RHEL releases for system management. Then we have also what is called a bit similar, access computer from the network. So it's not desktop login, but network. So we said, okay, this sounds a bit like FTP. So you can control FTP access, which user can access FTP on the host with this group policy, and so on. Then we have, yeah, CRONDY. And what is also important, some service we always permit, mostly services which are kind of access control on its own. So the sudo command, for example, it does not make sense to have sudo rules and on top another access control for the sudo command. So we always permit it. And you also have a always deny rule, which is typically not set, but it's default for all new services which are not known. So how, talking about sudo, another use case, Simo also mentioned it, we have this in IPA, and it can be used in Active Directory as well. It's not that comfortable to use because there is mostly no tooling. But the sudo program since long provide a LDAP schema, which also can be loaded into Active Directory, and then with your favorite LDAP editor, you can configure sudo rules in Active Directory. And SSD will download the rules, put it into the cache, and has a separate process which prepares the rules written from LDAP for the consumption of the sudo command. So the sudo command on the client will just talk to the SSD component, which reads data from the cache, so it's even working in the offline case. For more details, there's a link a colleague of mine, Jakob, wrote a blog about it, how to configure and use it in more details. So this is just also a convenient way to not spread your rules by file, but have it centrally stored and modifiable on a central place, in this case, Active Directory. And since you also get the Active Directory replication for free, you also don't have a single point of failure. So if one of your Active Directory domain controller dies, you still have the rules on another server. As I said, SUDO since long supports storing the rules in LDAP, what would be the benefits of using SSD in between? I mostly mentioned them already. It's about caching. Caching also means we don't look up the rules whenever someone issues the SUDO command, but have some rules when the rules should be updated. So we lower the load on the Active Directory servers here. Also, we don't have to put some Active Directory credentials or LDAP bind DNs and so on into the SUDO configuration because SSD already knows all about how to connect Active Directory. So it's also making configuration more simple. And you don't have, for example, to put your bind credentials into some SUDO configuration files. Next example, the DBus interface I mentioned earlier. From the SSD point of view, we call it InfoPipe. And yeah, it typically answers the question of how to find the telephone number of the user or the office or some other attributes which is stored in Active Directory. But there's kind of no common way except LDAP to get access to those attributes, especially on client. So when you want to access it, you need to bind to LDAP. Typically with Active Directory, you need two credentials. You cannot do anonymous binds to look up telephone numbers and so on. There is the classic Unix way to store at least the telephone number and some other information about the user in the geckos field. And the finger command also will print this out nicely. I haven't tried. I still hope it does. At least it does it for me in the 90s. But telephone number is not all. So as I mentioned, there might be application-specific data. There might be, I will show you later on, for example, the user certificate. All kind of attributes you want to make available on the client because it's useful for the user or for some application. And so since SSD reads the LDAP object from Active Directory, it can just read any attribute you want you have in the user attribute in the user object. And how to make it available locally, there are various ways. Typical on the Linux desktop today is DBus. And so we didn't want to sit down and invent something on our own, but we used something which is already available from the free desktop organization, which are all already defined some kind of DBus interface to look up user information on the local system. And so we have some SSD component which can be connected via DBus, and then depending on the request, looks up data in the cache of SSD and make it available via DBus to the client. And here is, for example, one of the points I want to make about reading more data than Samba or WinBind typically need from Active Directory. Also, the SUDO data, of course, was a similar example. Yeah, a typical request here, I showed it on the command line. Typically, an application will do some library calls. This is another reason for using DBus, because DBus interfaces are available for any language. So whatever the language of the day is, there will be some kind of DBus interface. If it's good or not, I don't can comment on this, but at least it will get you the data. And yeah, here you can, for example, define the email and the telephone number and any other data you want to have on the client as well. Okay, next topic. Since Active Directory provides Kerberos, and for example, the PuTTY SSH client can handle Kerberos via the GSS IPA authentication, and also the OpenSSH server can handle this. I wonder how many thought why I still have to type my password. And this is because there are different, again, different namespaces. The names in Kerberos and the names you use to log onto to your system. Kerberos has its Kerberos principles, and yeah, on the system you have your POSIX name, and there is no relation between the two. Sometimes it is a bit tricked because at least MIT Kerberos has some heuristics. It just strips the real part, the at AD domain part, from the Kerberos principle and looks if this is the username you try to want to try to log in. And if it is, okay, then it works. If not, then access is denied. But yeah, you can see in the example, if you have a forest with child domains and just stripping the domain part, the user with the same name, for example, the administrator user, will be mapped to the same local user, although they are coming from different domains. So, and if you want to log in with a fully quiet name, like the NT style AD / user, it's also not supported by this kind of mapping. So what we did on the SSD side, we created a plugin for MIT Kerberos, which can map the Kerberos principle to a local login name. And with this, you can type in any kind of name you want, which is known on the client system in the username prompt of the PuTTY SSH client, for example. And then you get the Kerberos authentication, because with the help of the plugin, the SSHD server on the client is able to map the Kerberos principle to the username you give at the login prompt and can allow access. Here is an example where I use the AD / T1 test user 1 and it just coming in. Okay, next, also related to authentication. Since the last version, SSD supports smart card authentication. So depending if a smart card is inserted in the smart card reader and the user trying to log in has the certificate mapped to his user object in Active Directory or any other LLAP server, SSD will not ask for a password, but for the PIN of the smart card, and then verifies the PIN, do the validation on the certificate, if it's valid and so on, and then use the smart card for authentication. If the smart card is not inserted, or if there is no smart card mapped to the user who tries to log in, then just the password is asked. Transparently, for the user, he just gets the right prompt.
So, why are you using the user certificate attribute in AD when you use smart card authentication on a Windows box? You typically just get the proposed principle from the smart card with the user principle name that's stored in the certificate on the smart card, and then you just log in with that and do a PK init.
Because this extension, this extension with the user principle, this is a special Microsoft defined field in the subject alternatives names blob of the certificate, and it might not be available on all smart cards. So we started just with the most common, lowest, and most common ground. And this is, you have a smart card, and we look up the certificate, the full certificate in Active Directory. So for the next releases, we plan to do more specific kind of mapping. So to, for example, pick certain objects from the subject alternatives names and look them up. So you don't have to have the full certificate stored in Active Directory or any other LLAP server. But having the certificate stored in the user entry is just, yeah, the common ground, which should work everywhere. With this Microsoft principle, yeah, this is a special extension which you cannot expect to be available in every certificate on every smart card. This is why this is we do it this way as a first step. But of course, in future, when we have this more elaborated mapping, we might just offer a more suitable prompt for the user.
Okay.
So here's what I said. The subject alternative name, this is this small part here. So in this certificate, this has only my email address. But you can put other things. Also, depending if this is a user or a service certificate, you will also have different contact in the subject alternative name. But yeah, just for illustration, this is how a certificate looks like. It has some validity information and date form. And also here, the OCSP. This is some service you can check if the certificate is still valid or revoked. You can also put other lists here, but okay. This is logging on my terminal with logging or with the graphical window manager, but can I use certificates also for remote hosts? Because the certificate reader is attached to my workstation. What do I with remote hosts? And well, as you can see, or as you know, the certificate has a kind of public key in it. And of course, there is a matching private key on the smart card, which is protected by the PIN. And if it's done right, it's only created on the smart card and never can leave the smart card. So this is one of the nice features of smart cards. There are, of course, shortcomings. And of course, there are ways to extract the key. But for a start, it's, I think, at least a good idea that you have your private key you can carry around with you, and it's most of the time protected well. And yeah, the public key is part of the certificate, and you can see it as a public key with metadata, which helps you to evaluate the key. And yeah, public-private key. Somebody might think of, okay, we have SSH with public-private key authentication, and we can do exactly this. Typically, you extract the public key with the SSH keygen utility, and then just put it into authorized keys file on some clients. And then if you call SSH with the capital I option and giving some library pass, I can tell the details afterwards what this means. Your smart card is accessed. You give the PIN to access the private key, and then you're just doing normal SSH authentication. But here, the certificate data is completely ignored because you extract the public key only once without any data. What we added to SSD is that we read the user certificate already for authentication from Active Directory. SSD can also extract the public key and send it to SSH. But what it does in between is also it validates the certificate. So if the certificate gets invalid or revoked, SSD will not hand the public key out to the OpenSSHD, and access is denied. And this is an advantage to the method where you're just copying the public key to every host you want to access. And also, this is also easier for managing the stuff because you only have to store your certificate once in the Active Directory, and it is available as certificate or SSH public key on any client connected to Active Directory via SSD. This is another attribute which we read from Active Directory, which currently WinBind does not read. And it goes even further if you're using SSH authentication agent forwarding. You can just from the remote host log on to the next remote host because the forwarding agent is connecting back to your smart card. And as soon as you pull your smart card out of the reader, you cannot connect any further. And there is even a PUM module called PUM SSH agent auth so that you can even map the smart card authentication so that the smart card is inserted and you once put on the right PIN to other applications. For example, SUDO on a remote client can also be authenticated with the help of a smart card connected to your desktop. And running this through SSD also makes sure the certificate is still valid and not revoked. Okay, this is more or less the end of my main talk. What would be the future? We currently released SSD in a container, and the container is already able to join IPA and Active Directory domains. So in general, it would be nice to see another container with WinBind so that both WinBind and SSD can run together in a suitable configuration on whatever container ship you want to sail. Okay, thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you again. One question maybe? We already had some questions during the talk, so. Okay.
So how do you do the authentication to other services in AD when you log in with a smart card? Because you don't have a Kerberos ticket.
Yeah, okay, that is upcoming. So yeah, so currently we do local authentication. I'm not sure if I'm ready. So I have patches for pkinit. I'm not sure if they will be available next as the release or in the release afterwards. So it's a bit because we have to coordinate. We have another kind of authentication I didn't mention here. This is because it's specific for IPA. It's two-factor authentication. And so it's a bit tricky to get the user prompting correctly when you have, yeah, kind of password is available, smart card is in the slot, and the users also have, is configured to have a one-time password OTP token. And so, yeah, since IPA comes first, we currently concentrate on the prompting for OTP, but if time permits, I will also add the pkinit.
Okay, great.
You had some remark? Regarding this.
One area that I've recently started looking again at is domain controller lookup. And this might be something that we should cooperate on, something like site awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And which domain controller is the best, which domain controller has the best, whatever required features, read-only domain controllers, mm-hmm. all that stuff. What WinWind would also like to do is connect to multiple domain controllers simultaneously to spread load. This is not really a general remark, but it's more like giving food for thought. How can we cooperate here? I mean, you need to locate domain controllers. We do, and that's a surprisingly complex task.
For example, site lookup, CL plug pings, and so on. This would be nice to have a library which everyone can use to get the site of the client, for example. Yeah. Suitable domain controllers, with accessing multiple servers at the same time. So currently we have the philosophy, we kind of try to stay at one server with all kind of servers, so with LDAP, with Kerberos, and so on, also to make sure we see see consistent data and not have on one server data which is not replicated to the other, and so on. So this is why we currently try to keep talking to a single server, and if this fails, we fail over to another one.
This approach, I mean, we have seen problems with that approach. In particular, in the cluster case, one node dies that has hosted like 5,000 client connections.
Mm-hmm.
They fail over simultaneously to another node, and they all want to re-authenticate with some. I mean, not all of them do Kerberos. Maybe 1,000 of them want to do NTLM. Your domain controller just can't handle it on its own. Yep. So you'll need to spread the load in that case. So. Yeah, for that we need to spread the load across multiple domain controllers.
Just a comment. It would be nice to have a service that provide the list of domain controller. We have something like that in SSSD, in the sense that we have a plugin for Kerby 5 that allows you to fix all the other client application also to use the same domain controller, the SSSD control. It's not perfect, we want to change it. It may be the time to provide a service jointly, and then we all just talk to that service, and that service does the job.
Yeah. Another comment to what Volker said about the performance if you do massive migration of the authentications. It's not only when you do migration like that. One problem with WinBind on each client is that if you have, say, 20,000 Linux clients, each running WinBind, they hammer domain controllers at the same time with so many connections that the many domain controllers simply die. And that's partially because of lack of caching for certain data, partially because of the probing of the domain controllers, but there seem to be a genuine need for having swarms of the clients concentrate on some of the requests. So we have this with Free IPA, where actually all IPA clients talking over a Forest Trust, they actually talk to IPA domain controllers, and then IPA domain controllers talks to the AD domain controllers. This gives a bit of caching of the common data that is seen on all clients and reduces number of LDAP requests to the DCs. But the problem here is that if you don't have this kind of a service in the middle or a grouping service, you're doomed anyway, at least on the AD side, because then you need to scale hardware there. And that's a huge problem which we need to address together. One way or another, SSSD in direct AD integration also hammers all of those AD domain controls. So having a common swarming method or protocol would help customers here.
Okay, thank you, Sumit.